Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I am the net control operator for this, the Limark Technical Net. It's been going strong for over 43 years now. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we put ourselves in front of our little radios, and we chat for a few hours. We exchange ideas and opinions, and we teach each other, and we learn from each other, and hopefully we're a wee bit entertained by each other. And I thank you once again for joining me this particular Sunday night at 8 p.m. instead of watching the Oscars. Anyway, let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual links. Okay. If you want to reach me via email, that would be for mailbag questions, TechNet puzzles. If you have an interesting puzzle that might stimulate conversation, or if there's some technology in the news that you are well aware of and would like to share your expertise with us, you can contact me and we'll arrange some time for that. Or if you want me to tap Paul, WS2N, on the shoulder and have him take a look at some NASA or space-related story that you saw and comment on it, of course, you can contact him directly. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. My email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Also, as always, I have a link page. I cut and paste interesting articles that I read throughout the week, and I put it up on this link page. So if you're bored or you have some insomnia in the middle of the night and need something to distract you, you can pull up my page and read it whenever you want. You can get to it by typing into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com. We have a chat room available. It's been kind of quiet lately, but it's still available. If you want to check it out, you type into your browser, chat.ac2gs.com, and that brings you to the chat room. We offer an audio stream of the Technical Net on the Internet. Initially, it was purely for the Technical Net. Some people asked me to keep it live the rest of the week, so it's an Internet stream of the Glen Oaks Repeater. If you want to access it, you type into your browser, technet.ac2gs.com. And as always, I'd like to remind people that MikeAC2NJI has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv. It has over a million visitors. It has archives of this Limark Technical Net that go as far back as September of 2006. So, avail yourself of the wisdom of hams that have moved away from the area or unfortunately become silent keys. Their wisdom is still available in the form of audio files that you can play anytime that you want. So please check that out. Let me drop for a second and I'll tell you what we'll have planned for tonight. Okay, we're going to have a standard operating session tonight, hopefully. There's really nothing in the news about new things, really, of artificial intelligence. It's just the same billionaires kind of churning the water and trying to get the excitement up. I mean, it was a little bit. Amazon made their announcement that they were going to upgrade their Alexa servant agent with more sophisticated artificial intelligence in the coming months. They'll roll it out slowly in the United States for different devices. So that might be interesting. We'll see what they bring us. Nevertheless, so there's no real chat about AI for tonight in, as far as I'm aware. We will start as usual with questions, comments, topics. We would like them to start out in amateur radio, but as the night progresses, we're open to any discussion of science and technology. I kind of pointlessly remark that there's a group of people that for one reason or another don't get around to turning the radio on until 9:30, 10 o'clock, and sometimes they get a little annoyed that, you know, there's a line. If you If you get up into the line earlier, then you're probably going to be able to ask your question and make your comment earlier. If you show up at 10 o'clock then, and if someone is talking, I'm not going to throw people out because they were nice enough to show up at 8 o'clock or 8:30 or so. So most likely I'm still talking to people who haven't turned their radio on yet, so you know, it's kind of difficult to get to them if they have this this habit. But we'll try as best we can to let everyone have a chance to talk, but you do understand that there's only so many minutes in an hour. Anyway, that should take us to approximately 10:15. Paul, WS2N, will join us with the SpaceNet report. That should take us to approximately 11 p.m. I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well. So that's the game plan for tonight, if laws of physics continue to work the way they're supposed to, and not too many things fail. We've had times where the repeater failed, where my shack failed, where all kinds of things are capable of failing. But hopefully that will not be the case tonight. So let's all hope for the best, and we're open for business. If anyone has any questions or comments or topics, please hit the push to talk and give us your first name, your call sign, and what you got planned for us tonight.
WTBC, ham radio related.
And
WS2N with a ham radio question.
November 2 is at Echo Alpha.
Could the last gentleman repeat his call sign?
Sure, November 2, Zulu Echo Alpha.
What's your first name, sir?
Glenn, Golf Lima Echo November.
Okay, very good, Glenn. Okay, so we have Rich, we have Wesley, we have Paul, and we have Glenn. Anyone else want to put their name down? Okay, very good. Rich, you're up first. What's your question or your comment for tonight?
Okay, I both have comments and questions. I was on Working the World today on my new ICOM 7300, and there was an ARRL contest going on, so it was easy to make contacts, but I was just overwhelmed by how much better this radio is than my old Kenwood 440. I wasted a lot of days knocking my head against the wall with that Kenwood 440, where this 7300, both on the receive and transmit side, is a completely different experience than the 440, completely different. Anyway, so I'm really enjoying it tremendously. And it brings up a couple of questions. Let me let it drop. Okay, first of all, the rig isn't grounded. My 440 wasn't grounded, and there was an article about how grounding might be a little bit of a myth. So my first question is, how important is grounding a rig, when to me, I can see no difference? Go ahead.
Okay, well, it's preventative. There's a case to be made for sometimes antennas will pick up static charges, and that could degrade the signal, add to the noise floor, and proper grounding is a good preventative measure for that. Also, there's, in case you're concerned about electrocution and such, so you might want a properly lightning arrest ground the antenna system so that if you happen to live in areas that have a higher chance of lightning, there are parts of Long Island that that happens to people. It can be somewhat protective. It's not 100%. It sort of depends upon other factors, but it's probably good practice, if you can, to properly ground your system. There are other people, though, out there. You know, I mean, there's a lot of guys who have radios in apartment complexes high up, very high floors, and it's kind of problematic to ground things. They might ground it to cold water pipes, but, you know, unless you know how the plumbing works, you never quite know if it's proper ground. So a lot of people do float their ground, which is what you're doing, which basically means that you don't have a ground. If nothing bad happens to you, then you got away with something. If something bad happens to you, then chances are a bunch of people are going to say you should have grounded your system. So you can get by without grounding it, but for slight improvement in static-produced background noise and risk of lightning problems, it's a good idea to ground your radio system, your antenna system, if you can.
Coming.
Yeah, I don't know how I would ground it in the first place. I mean, is an artificial ground better than nothing? You know, I have that MSJ artificial ground.
No, it's not better than nothing. It's probably worse than nothing because it gives you a full sense of security. It's not going to help you with lightnings at all. And it might improve the background noise floor a little bit. It might not. But I think most of what it does is empty your credit card a little bit and increase your full sense of security.
All right. That's basically what I thought. I'll try it to see if the background noise comes down a little bit. But like I said, I worked the world today. I had no problem. I'm using my shortened NZ half wave, which is just miraculous. I mean, this thing works from 10 meters up to, I even got on 80. And not well, you know, I was just above the noise limit to some guys, but I actually got out on 80. The antenna's only 15 feet above the ground, and I got out on 80. The SWR is low on just about everything from 10 to 40. So that brings me to part two of my little time here, which is I would like to build a 10-meter vertical. And you know we talked about this 10-meter vertical that's actually, a vertical dipole where you take half of the antenna and you strip the braid off, which you really don't have to do. There's another way to do it. But I want to try an antenna like that, Roy. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Hey, is the PL coming?
Yes. Okay, we got a bunch of commenters. Jeff, first.
Yeah, thanks, Roy. Just a comment about the Kenwood versus the 7300. You're talking about a modern radio versus something that was made in the 80s that probably has never been aligned, or, you know, a lot of them haven't been aligned. That radio will receive probably as a minimum discernible signal at minus 125 dBm. So I think good alignment for your 440 will put it right back in the ball game. And it's a triple conversion radio with great Kenwood great audio, so just a kind of an old-time Kenwood fan. And I've had a 7300 and a bunch of old EA2 and Kenwood machines. And, you know, if you tune them all up, they all work pretty much the same.
Thank you, Jeff. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of, you know, if you let something kind of age and you don't kind of polish it up a little bit, it does get a little, you know, old. But I'm sure there's a lot of guys who really take very good care of their radios who do have them tuned at semi-regular places. None of these radios are really, I think, ultimately were designed or thought of as not needing a little tweaking and little tuning after 40 years. So I would agree with you, Jeff. I think the 7300 is a very nice model. A lot of people love it. But, you know, there are people out there who will only use a Drake radio, and they're very happy with their results. And there are other brands that people particularly like.
The thing about the 7300 is the filtering is so much better than the 440. The filtering it makes a big difference.
What aspect of the filtering are you talking about? Are you talking about the digital signal processor, noise filtering? Are you talking about just a band filtering? You know, you got to be a little bit more descriptive for me.
Yeah, just filtering out QRF. There are three positions that of filtering you can go to, and then you could fine tune each one of those three positions. So the 440 didn't have anything close to that, and today, especially with all the QRM due to the contest, I really got to use the filtering, and it was pretty amazing. It was pretty amazing. Don't get me wrong, I love my 440, but this 7300 is quite a little radio. It really, really is. There's a reason why so many people have them. You know, there's a real reason for it. And I'm very, very happy with my purchase. Anyway, back to that antenna I'm talking about, right? Where you strip back half of the braid or the braid on half of the antenna. Go ahead.
Yeah, Rick. It's just that, you know, Jeff wanted to say something on this subject. I didn't want to move away from the subject quite yet. We'll get to it. We got lots and lots of time. But Wesley also wanted to make a comment, so let Wesley make a comment, and then we'll get back to the antenna that you're thinking about.
Okay, into Jan. Well, actually, these rigs should be grounded. That means you don't have to ground it if you don't want to, but it is grounded anyhow. The new radios or every radio should have a plug that has a ground bolt, and by that it is a ground. It's connected physically to the ground. So the body of the transceiver is also connected to the ground by that bolt. Unless we have a situation in which somebody used the extension cord without a bolt and put it reverse.
Okay, well,
one comment.
Yes, Paul, please.
Yeah, as far as grounding goes, I've tried it with and without the grounding on the 7300, as well as the Kenwood, and I never noticed a difference. I mean, it's there, and I have a wire connected to my hydronic heating system. So, I mean, I always had it for the 7300, so I just, attach it to the, for the wood. So now I do the same for the 7300 as well. And, if you take it outside, if you take it off, if you're doing solder, chances are you're not going to put a stake in the ground and ground the radio. Mobile, you're in a mobile situation, you're on rubber tires, so you're in the International Space Station, you don't have a ground going down to Earth. I really never noticed a difference one way or the other with or without the ground. But I always leave it grounded, you know. This way, chances of building up a charge when the wind blows on the antenna, it's minimal. I believe it's reduced. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, Paul. I mean, it's not an obvious benefit unless something terrible happens to you. You know, you're not going to get any lightning storms in the ISS, so you don't have to kind of worry yourself about grounding things. You know, grounding is a complicated and confusing thing because we call a lot of things ground, and they're different things. The utility electrical power ground is not necessarily the same thing as a good ground that's a short path from your shack to a ground potential, as opposed to the ground pole in your three conductor power receptacle is a ground, but it's a ground at the fuse site, and you know who knows how much current is leaking in your home current rather than going straight to ground. So if you're going to ground properly your shack and your antenna system, you shouldn't really use most electrical utility grounds. They're not as clean as you would want them to. You know, a straight, broad, thick wire to a ground pole, you know, with the shortest path is the best way to go if you're going to ground things. And
also, my question is going to be about the 7300 as well, so I don't know if Rich is going to stick around later or not, but when you get to me, that happened to be one of my questions as well about that rig. Anyway, back to you, Rich.
Okay, very good. I hope Rich will be able to stay with us for the rest of our net here. I also just wanted to add to Rich that one of the main reasons why you probably like your very adjustable band filter is because you have a software-defined radio, and all of the filtering is not being done through a legacy series of component created filters, but are simply algorithms applied to a bit stream in the SDR. So one of the many benefits is there's no limitation. You could have the sharpest filters that you want without any ringing, which is not possible with other than really expensive legacy filters. And you would have to mechanically switch in and switch out components to change the characteristics of a legacy band filter. So, you know, we talked many times in the past about, you know, is SDR that terribly better than legacy? And this is one of the ways that it is. It's flexibility, if the software allows for it, to adjust the contours of any band. A bandwidth filter is amazing, at least to me.
Well, today is the first day, because of all the QRM and the contest, first day I got to use the filter, and you could really get rid of QRM beautifully with the 7300.
Well, like anything, I mean, there's no absolutes. If someone is transmitting on your frequency, you're not going to be able to filter it out. If he's slightly to the left or slightly to the right, you could narrow your reception. You'll kind of make the fidelity of the voice a little more annoying. But at the, you know, along with that, you'll be able to filter out at the edges of your band any signal that's bleeding through. But, I mean, it's not perfect. Again, I've had these filters all the time, and if you got some guy close enough to you, frequency-wise, and you're not willing to narrow the band to something like 1 kilohertz and make it sound really harsh, you can't make it to go away. You could make it a little less annoying, but you can't make it go away in many cases.
Okay. Can I move on now? I'm chomping at the bit to ask this question.
Yes, indeed. Everyone who wanted to say something, you had to give people a chance to say their piece, too, because it's a community net. Otherwise, we could just talk on the phone. I am well aware of the type of antenna that you are looking for. It looks like it only has one leg, so it looks like it's a quarter wave vertical, except that it's a little tricky in that you're putting a RF choke about a quarter of a wavelength away from the splice point where it's purely just the center feed wire. So that effectively what's happening is you're using common mode to have part of the transmission line be one leg of a center-fed dipole.
Right. So here's one of the questions. By the way, I'm watching a YouTube video as we speak of a guy making a 10-meter J-pole, and I wonder if there's any advantage to a J-pole over the type of antenna we're talking about. Anyway, the type of antenna we're talking about, it does have that choke, but it's also a 200-ohm antenna. And I just happen to have a 4-to-1 balun. And I'm wondering, where would I put the 4-to-1 balun? Is that the last thing in the circuit before it goes to the coax? Or is it before the choke? Where would it go, Roy?
It goes after the choke.
Okay, after the choke. Now, so you have the choke. And that, now the choke isn't at the midpoint, as you were saying, right?
It's not at the midpoint. I hope people kind of understand what we're trying to say here. You have a length of coax cable. It's 3/4 of a wavelength in length. The first quarter, you strip off the outer shielding. And so that's all that's exposed is the center wire. You then go down to about a quarter wavelength distance from where you cut away the shielding, and that's where you put the RF choke. And then beyond the RF choke is where you put the connect it to your antenna, to your radio.
Okay, now... there's another way to do it without stripping, you know, which is a pain in the ass, stripping that center, that shielding all the way down to where you have to cut it off, and that is just to have the coax go up and then just solder to the center conductor a piece of wire that's a quarter wavelength long. So that's, in effect, the coax without the shielding on it. That's what the wire does. It has no shielding, so it's as if you're just extending the center conductor, right?
Yeah, but that's kind of difficult to build structurally stable. You're kind of introducing an instability that is the whole point for the exercise, that you know, it kind of works as a single piece of wire, except that it has multiple layers altered and adjusted. If you're going to start to pierce the jacket and then pierce the shielding and then wire a separate piece of wire into the center conductor, and then you have to stabilize that place, and it's also an entry for water, and so, you know, it kind of defeats the purpose. You could do it, but the question is why would you want to do something like that? It kind of diminishes the mechanical stability and the simplicity of the design.
Just soldering a number 14 wire to the center conductor of the end of the coax isn't a big deal. It's really not. In fact, that's the way I saw this one guy, how he made the antenna. Because to have to go in there and pick apart that braid all the way down, I don't know how many feet it is, 6 feet, 8 feet, I don't know how many feet it is a pain in the butt. Solder a piece of wire to the center conductor and have that as your element, as one of the elements. I don't know. It seems a lot easier to me. And you just put, you know, some shrink tubing at that juncture, and you're done. Anyway, why is this antenna a 200-ohm antenna?
I would have to take a look at it. I think most of the versions that I've seen operate as 50 ohms. So I'd have to kind of take a look at it, and yeah, you could certainly use a completely different piece of wire as the exposed portion. You just have to make sure that your soldering stands up to the environmental factors. But yeah, you could certainly make your you don't. There's nothing necessitating you using the center wire of the coax. It's just structurally a little bit easier to deal with. And as far as stripping the coax, you don't have to kind of go into a wacky situation. As long as it's not going to be terribly long, you just put a cut into the shield, and, you know, there are blades that are kind of made to be exactly the right length. And you just pull it across and pull it out the end. You might have to do it by a few segments, but you don't have to basically dissect the whole coaxial cable in order to just kind of get the insulator and the center wire. That's all you really need. You can leave the insulation there all you want. You just have to get the shield away.
Yeah, I understand. The choke, does that have to be a specific amount of turns if you're using a ferrite core?
Not specifically. I mean, fundamentally what you're doing is you're utilizing the tendency that most of us hate of transmission lines, in that you don't want them to be common mode most of the time, because they deploy your RF radiation hither all over the place because it's following the path of your transmission line back into your shack, and then it's then filling your shack with a lot of RF that's going to interact with a lot of electrical equipment. So most of the time, people don't want common mode transmission. There are times where you're using common mode transmission, a lot of times with NFEDs, although theoretically NFEDs don't have to have a counterpoise. A lot of times the transmission line is your counterpoise, which is one of the reasons why a lot of times NFEDs are notorious for getting RF into the shack and all over the darn place. So, it shouldn't be a problem. Like I said before, if you want to just kind of take the center line and put a wire and solder it well, but you have to mechanically solder it well. And you can also use heat shrink to kind of hopefully waterproof it a little bit. So both of our options.
Is there any benefit over a J-pole type design over what we're talking about?
I think so. J-poles have got a lot of public relations points. A lot of people love them. They're small, they're sturdy, but they're inefficient. They're basically half-wave. It's another end fed. It's basically a J-pole is an end fed half-wave with an impedance matching stub on the side. So, all things being equal, stubs and such are kind of lossy things. So I think you'd be better off with the one you have in mind rather than, say, J-poles. I'm not a big fan of J-poles, as some people might perceive.
Easy to build.
Yeah, Jeff?
Thanks, Roy. No one has mentioned horizontal versus vertical, and it depends on where you're trying to communicate. But I've found that local nets with my vertical, I'm not able to communicate on 10 meters, and with a kind of lossy, fed, random line. Horizontally deployed, I'm much better able to get out. So again, depends on where you're trying to go, what you're trying to accomplish. But horizontal versus vertical is another aspect.
Wesley, recognize. Let me put my two cents worth in, and then I'll let you talk, Wesley. I've had both. I've had a fan dipole capable of 10 meters, and I have a Serio 5/8 wave vertical. And when I had both and I was able to switch back and forth, I found, generally speaking, for whatever reason, my vertical to be more productive. And I'll unfortunately repeat a story that I've told far too many times. There was this one guy in Florida, and most people were finding that he faded in and out, which is not unusual, except that I had both of my antennas, and I realized what he was doing was Faraday rotation was occurring with his skywave propagation, and his actual polarization angle was rotating through the ionosphere because my horizontal would pick him up, but not my vertical, then my vertical would pick him up, but not the horizontal, and he would just rotate away. So especially with skywave propagation, there's a lot of Faraday rotation that goes on that just screws up nice simple concepts like, use vertical oriented antennas for people with vertically oriented antennas on their side. There's a lot of variables out there.
Roger, best explanation ever.
Thank you. Wesley, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, but you said it all. You were first. Before we... The one thing that I can add to your comment is that if you have a vertical polarization, then if you draw the circle around it, you may see that 1 degree of in the given direction has 1/260 of the power.
Well, yeah, vertical antennas tend to be somewhat more omnidirectional. But if you really look at the specs for horizontal antennas, just for standard center-fed horizontal antennas, in free space, they have a gain of 1.5 decibels, which isn't a heck of a lot. And again, that's in free space. If you bring them down to near the ground, all bets are off. You might get a little bit of a gain. You might not. There are other aspects of orientation of an antenna. It's thought among some people that vertically oriented antennas are a little bit less noisy because of the nature of polarization of general RF noise in environments and such. But again, that's your mileage might vary.
I definitely want to go vertical because I'm just looking to this antenna for DX. My NFED works fine on 10 meters, except it's 15 feet off the ground, horizontally polarized. Even though today I worked Slovenia, I worked Italy, I worked Aruba, I mean all over the globe today. And so it's not that. I would just like to take advantage of this sunspot cycle and 10 meters. You know what's a shame? What's a real shame is you see during contests how crowded the bands could be if people used the bands, and they don't, you know. 10 meters, basically, during the day I would hear like three, maybe four, you know, QSOs going on. Today I heard 30 QSOs, you know, 10 times the amount of activity because of this contest. It just shows you how underutilized the bands are. Back to you, Roy.
AC2GS. Yeah, I mean, that's the ongoing problem. I mean, pick a frequency, any frequency, and they're underutilized. Unfortunately, that was not helpful for me this morning because I was trying to run a 10-meter net, and there was no place to set down. So I just gave up. But, you know, for people in the contest, yeah, it was great. It was the whole place was jumping all over there. But, I mean, again, the demographics are a somewhat aging community of amateur radio operators. They're get up and go, got up and went, unfortunately. There's little utilization of UHF, VHF, of microwaves, of, HF, you name the frequency, and I'm sure I could find people who were playing around in those frequencies 40, 50 years ago that would tell you a completely different story back in those days. There's more licensed amateur radio operators than there ever were in the United States, but most of them are technicians' licenses, and most of them, I think, are preppers who get their license, get a Baofeng, put it in a drawer, and that's the end of that. So there's a lot less activity than there should be. There are a whole bunch of theories, but I gave you mine.
You know, now that I've had a chance to get FT8 working, boy, I do not see the point at all of sending out a CQ, getting a return from you to your CQ and a signal report, and then moving on down the line. I do not see the point of FT8 at all. And yet, all of the bands, the FT8 portion is always active. I mean, the technology is mind-blowing, but the application is so underwhelming. I have no desire to make contact on FT8.
Well, that's because you're not terribly interested in wallpaper. You're just like, you know, there are guys who just love contesting. There's guys who hate contesting. There's guys who like rag chewing. There are guys who just want to tag base and collect their certificates and put it up on the wall next to the 472 other certificates that are covering their wall. You know, different strokes for different folks. I mean, I don't get it personally. I played around with the technology because I love technology in general, and I found it somewhat personally hollow. I like to interact with people. I like to learn things from people and get different perspectives. You don't get it on something like that. FT8 is not designed for conversation. Even the JS8 call, which is a someone took the open source and put in a text field so that you could ask them how the weather is. You know, but at the speed that you could ask them things, you know, you'd never get anywhere. So, you know, it depends what you're looking to get. If you're looking to get wallpaper or, you know, worked all this, worked all that, FT8 is a great way of doing it. You could set it up automatically so that you could just set all the programs and the software up, turn the radio on, and go out for dinner. And when you come back, you'll have gotten points to getting wallpaper. It's a pointless endeavor in my particular sensibilities, but, you know, I'm not the only guy in town.
I don't know how you get signal reports if you just let your computer run the show, let's say, overnight. How do you give somebody a signal report?
Because it's tied into the radio's meters and such, so it tells you the amplitude of the signal that you're getting into the computer. If it's loud, it's a high signal strength. If it's very low, it's a low signal strength.
So that's how they do it. All right. Well, I think all my questions have been very well answered. I will let you know how this antenna does, how it compares to my NFED, and I will enjoy this 7300. Yes, Paul, I'll be listening till the end of the net. So that's about it. W2BC, back to net.
Okay, very good, Rich. Thank you for participating. Wesley, we have a few people after you that I don't think will be very long. Is it okay if we take them first?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Okay, you're up, Paul.
Very good. Okay. Yeah, this happened to be a 7300 question as well, so it's a coincidence that Rich is on with his. Excellent radio, but there's one little icon that comes up on my screen, the top right, and all the way to the top and all the way to the right, and I don't know why it's there. It's kilohertz. It's just a beige looking icon that says kilohertz, and then to the left of it, it says, you know, maybe 10 kilohertz, 11. As you tune up and down, and sometimes it changes, but I can't find any direct connection between what I'm tuning and what the numbers mean. Sometimes it goes to zero, sometimes it goes to 5, or all the way up to 25 kilohertz. So I'm not sure why that's there, what it's doing there. Since I don't use it, I'd like to see if I can make it go away. What's supposed to be there is the time, and that's not there. So I've gone through the directions and, you know, trying to figure out what it is. There's countless YouTube. I mean, you can spend hours and hours and hours looking through the 7300 YouTube, which I've done, but I haven't come across that one yet. I'm just curious about what that is. Sounds like Rich has been really involved with the screen. Maybe he knows. Anyway, back to you, Roy, WS2M.
Okay, very good. Rich, you have any ideas what that might be? Have you noticed the kilohertz readout up in the corner there?
Yeah, I have noticed it, and I too don't know what it represents. I think early on I did look in the manual. Imagine that, touching a manual. But there are 100, at least, I have saved in YouTube at least 50 to 60 YouTubes about the 7300, much better than a manual. And boy, all you have to do is go through them once, and you really get the basics of the radio down, and then, of course, you have to go back to it. But after a while, the radio gets pretty easy to figure out. But Paul, I don't know, are those the tuning steps that the radio is currently set to? I'm not sure, Paul, I'm sorry, but I will look into it. I'll Google it and also ask people that I run into on the air. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, that would be great. And if you've noticed on YouTube, it should be the time. I'm not interested in having the time there. That would be more important. Let's say if you're on, you know, on one of the digital modes, and you're going to have the times recorded automatically. But I'm not going to do that. I'm like you. I'm not really interested in doing that mode. I am interested in DW. Boy, if you ever go on that, Rich, let me know what you think, because the reception on CW is just fantastic. If there's a couple of stations nearby, use that filtering, you know, it says, you know, filter one, filter two, filter three, and, you know, you just eliminate everybody. The only thing you hear by the time you're done is just that one station you try to work. It's just fantastic. Anyway, thanks, Rich, and if you find out what it is, let me know.
Paul, I have been on CW, and it's a pleasure. It's just a pleasure, especially that auto-tune button. It's a pleasure to use, and I plan on going on CW a lot more with the 440. I mean, listen to me, with the 7300. Back to Roy.
Okay, very good. I mean, it might be the stepping resolution of the VFO knob, but then it would probably stay the same. It wouldn't kind of change on its own. You know, I mean, I have that with my Flex 6700. I can set it to lock in every kilocycle or 500 hertz or 250 hertz or what have you. So it adjusts for the resolution of changing the frequency, but I'm in control of what that factor is. So the idea that it kind of will go by itself from 10 kilohertz to another setting kind of would make me think that that's not quite what it is. If I remember, I'll take a look through the manual. I don't mind manuals. I like manuals. But when I was a little kid, all I had was you know, the Sears catalog and such. I never got these things, so I just read about them. So I've got to use the reading manuals, even when I don't own the thing. So I'll take a look and see if I can find out. You know, it's another mystery, like what the little lowercase r for EchoLink stood for.
Roy, did you see the new Flex?
Yeah. I'm not that impressed. I would be curious if they had a version, the 8000 series, that mimicked the things that I could do with the 6700. But I mean, you know, the 8600 is basically a 6600 with some faster processors in them, I guess. But, you know, what exactly do they do that I can't do? At this point, nothing. You know, maybe in the future there'll be amazing things brought out in the firmware. But Flex Radio has kind of been sluggish about doing anything useful for firmware for at least 5 years.
That's what ICOM is doing with their radios. It's all firmware updates. It's not, you know, redesigns of interfaces and all that. It's all firmware updates. And the 7300 is about 7 years old already. And they've only had about, I think, four or five major firmware updates. My radio came with the latest firmware update installed already, so I was happy about that. Anyway, yeah, this technology is unbelievable. And the price point of the 7300, you can't beat it, you know. It's $1,000, and when you go up to the next model and the model after that, you're in $3,000 and $4,000 territory. So not only did they, you know, nail the design of the radio, they sure nailed the price point of the radio also. You know, the other ones just have, like, dual tuners and stuff like that. A lot of contest type of stuff. So, anyway, back to you, Roy.
Quick comment for Rich, Roy, WS2N.
Sure, Paul.
Barely hearing the courtesy tone. Okay, anyway, yeah, the, by the way, the rebate takes a long time. I finally just got mine back, and I guess it took me probably 6 weeks, I guess. So you don't hold your breath for that. Just want to let you know, Rich. But it does come, as long as you send it in the proper information.
Funny you mention that, Paul, because I did send it in properly, and I get an email that it was denied, and I look at the serial number that they say was denied, because it was already issued, and it wasn't even my radio serial number. So I shot an email back, and they actually did respond, saying that it was their mistake, and that my rebate is being processed. So there you go. W2BZ.
Rich, the first, yeah, mine was denied too, but they couldn't read the picture of the, apparently the picture of the receipt good enough, so I just sent another one back, you know, I just made a better a picture before I sent it back.
Boy, if anybody wants to know about cheap $200 antenna tuner, I found one.
Okay, you want to expand upon that? Andre.
I'll just leave it. If anybody's interested in an automatic antenna tuner, mine works great with my NFED half-wave and the 7300. So I'll just leave it at that in case anybody's interested.
Okay, very good, Rich.
Hello, Delta 2, Mike in here.
Comment about the antennas. I'm looking to get the A8710 by Icon. And that's, but you need the room. You need like 80 feet to put that up. But I'm going to try that one. I'm supposed to get all of most of the bands.
Yeah, Paul, this one is a MAT, M-A-T, 180H, Henry. MAT 180H. I know Roy is going to wince at this, but it is a Chinese product, but it got great reviews, and it works flawlessly. So I thought I would give it a chance, and I'm not disappointed at all. So much better than the tuner where you crank the inductor from one side to the other and then make the fine adjustments. Not only did I upgrade the radio to modern times, I upgraded the tuner to modern times. And I'm in ham radio heaven. Back to net.
Hey, C2GS. I'm glad you're happy, Rich. I hope it continues. I hope you get a lot of bang for your buck. Chinese products, I've often said, they're kind of Russian roulette. Some of them are great. Some of them are terrible. And you're never quite sure until you put the money down. I have a bunch of little toys that come from China. Would I invest in you know, a 100-watt transceiver? Probably not, for the reasons I've mentioned before. I won't bother people. But, you know, spectrum analyzers, VNAs, and, you know, watt meters, yeah, sure, what the heck. So I'm glad it's working out well for you, and I hope you continue to get a lot of pleasure out of it. I just want to kind of promote software-defined radios once again, although nowadays, you know, when I first got on here, you know, most people had legacy radios, and now with the popularity of things like the 7300 from ICOM, a lot of people have found religion. Software-defined radios are the future of our radio technology. Legacy.